This BBC podcast is supported by ads outside the UK.
The UK's digital tech scene is accelerating, and the proof is in the Unicorn Kingdom Pathfinder Awards. This year, we celebrate the next generation of pioneering startups that are shaping the tech landscape of tomorrow. The UK is a thriving ecosystem with access to global talent, cutting-edge research, and unparalleled investment opportunities. Your big idea belongs here. Visit great.gov.uk/UKPA to learn more.
An Bord erwarten Sie Bars, Spa-Duschen sowie preisgekrönte Bordunterhaltung. Es ist also kein Wunder, dass Emirates als beste Fluggesellschaft der Welt ausgezeichnet wurde. Wir fliegen Sie zu über 140 Reisezielen. Und mit unseren Interline-Partnern weltweit bieten wir Ihnen Anschlussflüge zu weiteren 1700 Städten auf 6 Kontinenten. Wenn wir behaupten, dass wir eine der größten internationalen Fluggesellschaften sind, meinen wir, wir bringen Sie an Ihr Wunschziel. Jetzt buchen auf emirates.de. Fly Emirates, fly better.
Hello and welcome to World Business Report from the BBC World Service. I'm Roger Hearing, and on this edition, a last-minute reprieve for Canada from Donald Trump's tariffs. It follows a similar agreement with Mexico. We'll get the details of the deals and ask about the prospects of a further delay in tariffs. We're speaking to businesses in Mexico, Canada and the United States as all three nations consider the potential impact if tariffs do eventually come in. In the last hour, the huge tariffs due to come in on imports to the US from Canada have been postponed. It follows a similar deal with Mexico announced earlier on Monday. And it's all been settled at the very last minute. The 25% tariff on goods from Canada, with energy imports being charged at 10%, were only hours away. Following a phone call with President Trump, the Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau said in a post on X, "I just had a good call with President Trump. Canada's implementing our $1.3 billion border plan, reinforcing the border with new choppers, technology and personnel, enhanced coordination with our American partners, and increased resources to stop the flow of fentanyl. Nearly 10,000 frontline personnel are and will be working on protecting the border," Justin Trudeau said. "In addition, Canada is making a new commitment to appoint a fentanyl czar. We'll list cartels as terrorists, ensure 24/7 eyes on the border, launch a Canada-US joint strike force to combat organized crime, fentanyl and money laundering. I've also signed," he said, "a new intelligence directive on organized crime and fentanyl, and we'll be backing it with $200 million. Proposed tariffs will be paused for at least 30 days while we work together." Well, Donald Trump posted on Truth Social about this also, ending his post, "As president, it's my responsibility to ensure the safety of all Americans. I'm doing just that. I'm very pleased with this initial outcome, and the tariffs announced on Saturday will be paused for a 30-day period to see whether or not a final economic deal with Canada can be structured. Fairness for all." Well, the BBC's North America business correspondent Michelle Fleury is in Windsor, Ontario, home of Canada's car industry, and in sight of Detroit, across the border, of course, the home of many of America's biggest car makers. She joins us now. Michelle, thanks for being with us. A real turnaround at the last minute. Did anyone see it coming?
Yeah, I mean, I think there'd been some conversations I'd been having with local business folk here today, kind of hoping perhaps that this might happen and letting out now a sigh of relief. But the question is, for how long does it last? And that is, uncertainty is really what's troubling many in the business community here who are worried about how that will impact them. Beyond that, though, some of the ordinary folk here in Canada, well, they're just still pretty mad. The reason for it is that they don't think this is any way to treat an ally, even if the tariffs are on hold for another 30 days.
Now, it does seem to be a bit of a match with the deal earlier, of course, with Mexico, also a delay for 30 days, but also talk about taking action on the border, trying to stop the flow of fentanyl, this drug that has caused so much trouble in America, and moving troops up to the line. Is this going to be the pattern, do you think, a kind of a deal effectively saying if you make the border secure, then tariffs might not be necessary at all?
I mean, I think it's, you know, the pattern we also saw with Colombia, with the threat of tariffs and then kind of an agreement of sorts being reached that avert them at the last minute. By threatening these, it sort of injects a whole level of fear for those who are sort of at the receiving end of it. And so I was talking to a company that makes kind of parts that go into the products we use every day. One example would be, you know, a car part, a piece of metal that goes into a car part. And he was saying, look, we were just investing in expanding our plant. You know, now we're not sure whether to kind of carry on with that or wait and see. And that's where it kind of permeates, regardless of whether or not these tariffs go into effect. It's that uncertainty. I know we keep saying that, but it really does have a long-term impact on future investment plans. If you think that this might come up again, if you think that the trade deal perhaps between the US, Mexico and Canada is no longer on such solid footing, then you will kind of look to change where you place your factories, your supply chains in the future. And that's where this has a knock-on effect.
Yeah, clearly uncertainty, because it changed at the very last minute, as it was, is very much part of the mood at the moment. And I suppose, Michelle, I mean, looking further afield, we know that Donald Trump has a scheduled phone call with President Xi of China, and we know that's the other country that's on the list of tariffs, 10%. I mean, I don't know, you can't do the same deal in terms of the border, but maybe a deal is in the offing.
I mean, maybe another delay. I would imagine China is hoping it would get sort of similar treatment. I think what is striking and what has angered people here in Canada, who I've been speaking to, is the idea that, look, we're meant to be your kind of little brother just north of you, you know, with a kind of long relationship, close relationship. And you're treating us like this, threatening us with 25% tariffs. Meanwhile, you know, your huge global competitor, China, you're threatening with 10% tariffs. So there was just a kind of anger over kind of how the relationship and what they're getting out of it. But Trump seems to relish that and plays on it to try and, you know, use it as a negotiating tool.
Michelle, thanks so much for being with us. Michelle Fleury there, live on the Canadian-US border. Now, it may come as a surprise, particularly given what Michelle was saying there, that not everyone in Canada is actually fuming about all this business with the tariffs. Paul Colborne is president and CEO of Surge Energy, a small oil producer in Alberta, Canada, and his firm could have lost $10 million US this year because of the 10% tariff on Canadian energy. But when I spoke to him, he said he still believes Canada must negotiate.
And I'm not happy with it, but there was a blueprint put out about 45 days ago where they said they put the countries in three different buckets, and they have hundreds of free trade agreements all over the world, and they're going out to negotiate and, you know, kind of shake the rug and renegotiate with the new regime coming in. And you saw it today. They put them on Mexico. Mexico's president negotiated for more troops on the border. They've given him a one-month pause. Trudeau's they're talking to today. So I think it's methodical anyways. And if you want a better deal and you're the biggest, strongest economy in the world, probably is a brilliant way to do it early in your time.
So it's just a gambit, you think? You don't think he's serious about doing this? It's just a way of getting better trade conditions?
I actually think that's exactly what it is, and using their incredible financial clout to negotiate the best deal they can get.
Okay, so it's a good way of negotiating, but at the end of the day, Canada's going to get a worse deal than it had before. So surely as a Canadian, that's not good.
Okay, so good for you, because years ago, I was lucky enough to be in a room with 10 other CEOs in Calgary, and Brian Mulroney, who negotiated the first free trade agreement with the United States, said that Canada, 1 + 1, a free trade agreement with the U.S., is equal to about 5 or 6 with Canada. It's equal to about 3.5 for the U.S. So Canada does way better under free trade than the United States. But they need our 4 million barrels a day of heavy oil. They need, you know, a lot of our raw materials up here in Canada. So Canada did amazingly well under free trade with the U.S. Trump believes too well. So I think there's lots of room to show some statesmanship and negotiate a very fair arrangement with the United States that works for them and works for us, the way Danielle Smith did a few weeks ago when she went down to see him, the way the Mexico lady went and negotiated with Trump. And today you see that Mexico's had their tariffs paused for a month. So I think lots of room to negotiate a good, fair deal that works for both.
But as you say, Canada has things the U.S. needs. What's to stop Trudeau playing hardball and saying, OK, we'll impose our own tariffs. If it's a trade war you want, it's a trade war you've got, and the U.S. will suffer as well.
Yeah, so there's a brilliant piece out today. A prof from University of Carleton said Canada's want $2 trillion of GDP. The United States is $27 trillion. They're an elephant, a monstrous elephant, and we're the squeaky little mouse in bed. They roll over. We are not going to win that ever. And they're our 120-year-old partner, and we should be negotiating a deal that's good for them, good for us. We should be open to that. And the benefits are huge for us, opening up their market and their economy.
Paul Colborn there of Surge Energy. Let's also now talk to another Canadian, Dr. Josipa Petrunic, who's president and CEO of Kutrik, which is the Canadian Urban Transit Research and Innovation Consortium. That's a group involved in developing technology projects on focusing on low carbon, zero emissions in transit and transportation, so electric cars and the like. Dr. Petrunic, thanks so much for joining us. This obviously is a change, a 30-day reprieve at least, in terms of these tariffs. But how worried do you think Canadian business should continue to be about all this?
Oh, I think super worried, but also strategic. We don't need to necessarily be running away scared. We do actually have a lot to offer, and there are a lot of negotiating capabilities we have in terms of critical minerals that we have for the electrified vehicle industry, as well as this highly integrated manufacturing market that affects way more than just cars. Many folks might be surprised to know that we manufacture buses, coaches, and rail cars in Canada, many of which and most of which find their way into the US market. So I think business is concerned. We're right to be concerned. At the same time, we're also right to be identifying all of our negotiating leverage points, which we have a plethora of.
Well, indeed. I mean, do you think, as I was saying to Paul Colborn, is it time for Canada to play hardball? Or, I mean, today, certainly, Prime Minister Trudeau seems to have given some concessions in return for the 30-day delay. So how to play this?
It is a reprieve for 30 days for us to organize ourselves, but also, let's be honest, for America to organize itself. I have no doubt there's chaos in Washington right now. It's not like this was necessarily, although it was outlined in a campaign, it wasn't outlined in this way with this speed and with this cadence. So there's a bit of chaos in Washington, too. And so that reprieve, I think, is both ways. Definitely hardball is the only way to play. You've got a bully south of the border. And the only way that this individual, and it's really not just Donald Trump, it is the negotiators around him that may be feeding into this narrative and this positioning, the only way that they will understand is if we fight back with what we have to fight back with. And some of those things do include, again, those critical minerals. Those critical minerals are golden. Our critical mineral mining capacity in Canada, heavily untapped, absolutely needed. And the person who needs the most, Elon Musk, his right-hand man, there in Washington these days. So that is absolutely a negotiating tactic that we can leverage.
But Dr. Petrunic, the problem surely is exactly as Paul Colborn just said to me, that Canada is a mouse in terms of the size of the economy compared to a giant, which is the US. In a trade war, you're going to lose.
Yeah, well, that's no doubt over the long term. We have one-tenth of the population, one-tenth of the economy, but that doesn't necessarily mean that it's in the interest of the United States to allow us to lose. There are very few jurisdictions around the world where you have undefended borders, essentially, because there's such integration, not only economically, but trustworthiness of people on both sides of the border. So there are three things that we really do need to do to indicate that we're here and we're here to play hardball. And then we're also here to negotiate our way into a more diversified future that should give pause and second thought to our American colleagues. The first is that it's not as though just because the president says it's over, NAFTA is over. There's certainly a role for Congress. Congress has a role in anything that is related to taxation. And so there's no doubt that this is going to have to work its way through Congress, even as it is.
Yeah, but Congress is dominated by Trump supporters, isn't it?
It is, but at the same time, it's not. Let's call a spade a spade. This is a lot of a Trump agenda here coming directly from the president and his campaign trail. It is not the case that a lot of Republican congressmen and women who represent jurisdictions that are going to be heavily hit by some of these tariffs and the job losses that could come with them are all of the same view. It's not the kind of Canadian and British system where the political parties have a whip that whips everybody into line. There are a lot of Republicans that do not agree with these policies, and we as Canadians need to be working with them to help them articulate those views too.
You could get rid of all this by becoming the 51st state. He's already suggested that.
Well, in fact, they should, I believe, probably become the 11th province, and life would be a lot better for a whole host of folks. But, you know, we do also forget that these trade agreements, in terms of the new NAFTA, it's not like they disappeared. There's still adjudication mechanisms. There's still Chapter 31. There's Chapter 10. These are mechanisms by which we can do state-to-state basically lawsuits, essentially suing one another. And although that's not going to solve the problem today, over the long term, we have to think about the counterfactual. What if Donald Trump has a stroke tomorrow and disappears? That is possible. And what happens if that's the case? Well, we want to make sure that we're pursuing the rules-based order. We want to make sure we're raising this at the WTO. And then we want to make sure as Canadians that we're leveraging our European free trade agreements.
We'll see where it goes. Dr. Petrini, thank you so much for your
time
and your thoughts. Really good to have you here on World Business Report. Well, what about the financial knockdown of all this, really? Because it's certainly been a very turbulent day on markets, both sides of the border. Let's talk to Derek Holt, Vice President and Head of Capital Markets Economics at Scotiabank in Toronto. Derek, thank you for being with us. The third Canadian we've had on this program today, on a very momentous day, in fact, in terms of the putting off of the tariffs. But what's your take on it?
Boy, we wound up at the exact same starting point we closed at on Friday in terms of the Canadian bond market, in terms of the Canadian dollar, in terms of oil prices. It was a very whippy session as they chased one headline after another. And on all three counts, we wound up exactly where we were at the beginning of it all. That's something I think we have to get used to going forward. I think that this is just a bit of a stay of execution in a sense, that there will be many iterations of this kind of Canada, U.S., Mexico, U.S.-Europe, U.S.-China set of tensions as we go forward.
Okay, what about the deal itself for the moment, the putting off deal? There's all these various elements being played in. Is that going to give a bit of confidence to Canadian business, which, as we've heard, having to think about what on earth they're going to be doing? They've got 30 days at least.
I think it will for now. It does address the cross-border fentanyl issue that I think was grossly overstated in the first place in terms of Canada's role in it. And so for the most part, it's the core package of $1.3 billion is the same thing that was offered a few weeks ago. And now it's embellished by a little bit more by way of titles and fentanyl czar and some more people working at the border. But the way Trump ended his Truth Social post, I think, was very revealing. He said, "I'm very pleased with this initial outcome, and the tariffs announced on Saturday will be paused for a 30-day period to see whether or not a final economic deal with Canada can be structured." That sounds to me like he's setting the same unrealistic expectations the last time we renegotiated the NAFTA agreement in compressing it into an overly short period of time. So 30 days from now, he might say, "Well, you didn't achieve my deadline," and we're back at it all over again.
So you really, if you were thinking about what business should be considering at the moment, you're saying, look, don't make any assumptions beyond 30 days.
Yes, and unfortunately, as forecasters, we have to make an awful lot of assumptions, and hence the curse of our jobs in this kind of environment. But I think what's happened here, regardless, is the damage has been done by President Trump. You got to think that every C-suite in Canada, the United States, and Mexico is pulling in their horns. If they're thinking of a multi-million or multi-billion dollar CapEx project, they've got to have much less confidence in the environment because you don't know what tomorrow's rules of the game will be for trade and investment.
Well, Derek, let me ask you the question I asked your other two fellow Canadians, really, which is, in the end, if it comes to a trade war, America's going to win. The US is going to win. The US is so big in comparison. So is it really worth fighting this trade war with retaliatory sanctions and that kind of thing for the health of Canadian business?
I think you have no choice. If Canada hadn't have stood up over this past weekend, Trump might have just stuck with 25% tariffs for an extended period of time. And it's like standing up to the schoolyard bully. You have to show that ability to defend your country. And going forward, it could have been 30%. It could have been some other issue like defense spending. And so I think we had no choice. And don't underestimate Canada's ability to bypass the Trump administration and take this battle straight onto Main Street America by making it very, very clear to them through highly integrated supply chains on both sides of the border what the cost will be to American consumers and American businesses. $5 a gallon, car prices soaring. These are some of the implications that would be raised to the forefront in terms of making it very clear to them what kind of a bill has to be footed by Americans.
Derek, thank you so much for being with us. Derek Holt there, Vice President and Head of Capital Market Economics at Scotiabank in Toronto. You're listening to World Business Report from the BBC World Service.
An Bord erwarten Sie Bars, Spa-Duschen sowie preisgekrönte Bordunterhaltung. Es ist also kein Wunder, dass Emirates als beste Fluggesellschaft der Welt ausgezeichnet wurde. Wir fliegen Sie zu über 140 Reisezielen. Und mit unseren Interline-Partnern weltweit bieten wir Ihnen Anschlussflüge zu weiteren 1700 Städten auf 6 Kontinenten. Wenn wir behaupten, dass wir eine der größten internationalen Fluggesellschaften sind, meinen wir, wir bringen Sie an Ihr Wunschziel. Jetzt buchen auf emirates.de. Fly Emirates. Fly better.
Well, let's turn our eyes a little bit south this time to have a look at what's been going on the markets in, well, in the US, and also what the general reaction has been. There's been something of a roller coaster ride on Wall Street. Sharp losses as the day began, but news about the postponement of the Mexico tariffs, which came a little bit earlier, did lead to something of an upturn. Peter Jankowskis, Vice President of Research and Analysis at Arbor Financial Services, is with me now. So, Peter, I mean, first of all, walk us through the day in terms of the markets, in terms of shares. How did Wall Street really feel about all this?
Well, it certainly started on a very sharp downtick. The S&P 500 was down more than 2% early this morning. Then you got the news from Mexico, and it rallied back, you know, recovered more than half of that, which was good. But it closed the day still down in the neighborhood of 0.7%. And you could see a clear impact on the automakers, et cetera, where you felt strongly the Canadian presence. GM was down 3% on the day. Ford was down almost 2%. But now in the aftermarket, after the Canadian announcement, the automakers have recovered virtually all of those losses. So it looks like the initial shock was strong, but now people are seeing it, at least in the near term, as business as usual.
So, Peter, I'll take from that actually investors don't want these kind of tariffs. They don't actually think they're a good thing just by the nature of the way that the markets are playing it.
I think that's correct. You know, certainly the investing public is against them. There probably are segments of the population that are in favor. They see them as perhaps a way to win back jobs that have been lost, et cetera. But I think people that better understand economics are definitely against it.
So in that sense, if this now goes, and we know that there's a 30-day delay, that's really all there is. Are U.S. businesses really now calculating what will happen after those 30 days, I suppose, in terms of potential losses? Inflation hit, I suppose, is a clear possibility as well. And trying to roll that into their predictions, how are they riding this?
Well, I think they certainly are developing contingency plans and looking at various scenarios, but it's very hard to forecast exactly where this is going to end up. I think it's interesting that, you know, as much as we hear about renegotiating these trade deals, the main things that have been announced publicly are more what I would term security issues, you know, the focus on fentanyl, the focus on the border. So it remains to be seen exactly what is being negotiated with regard to trade.
Yeah, because trade in the end is going to be a very important factor in, well, the things that, for example, the Fed is considering, I guess, in terms of trying to keep inflation under control, but getting a sense of which way the economy is going. I mean, would you be convinced, Peter, that in the end, when all this dust from this settles, you're going to be in a position where America's two biggest trading partners, Mexico and Canada, are actually paying pretty high amounts of money to bring goods into the U.S.?
I still think that's unlikely, just because of the geographic proximity and the fact that we're a natural trading bloc here. It seems unlikely that we'll end up in that route. I think the one that is more concerning is where do we end up with China, because they are a geopolitical rival. They do export a great deal of goods here to the U.S. And I think any negotiations there are going to be more fraught than they are with Canada and Mexico.
And of course, we know that Donald Trump has a call scheduled with President Xi Jinping, so we may see something from that. Peter, thank you so much for being with us. Peter Jankowskis there of Arbor Financial Services. Well, let's turn our thoughts further south. We've gone from Canada to the US. Let's go now to Mexico, where, of course, there is also a sense of relief at the postponement of very similar tariffs. Let's speak to Luis de la Calle, Manager managing director of Della Calle, Madrazo and Manquera, and formerly an undersecretary at the Ministry of the Economy in Mexico. Luis, thank you so much for being with us. First of all, how important is it that Mexico has won this 30-day reprieve?
Well, I think it's very important. I mean, there was an expectation that Donald Trump would impose these duties, that they might stay longer. They never came into effect. So it was good, positive news. The peso strengthened on the news. And we'll see what goes next.
But there's had to be quite a lot of concessions from your president to get this deal. A lot of things involved in sending troops to the border and other stuff. I mean, it is in a way, if you call it a Mexican standoff, Mexico has blinked.
Well, I mean, this is something about migration and fentanyl. If you asked me before all this happened, I would say that Mexico was going to collaborate on migration and fentanyl. The only question was whether that collaboration would be enough to placate, to satisfy Donald Trump or not. And that remains to be seen. So, I mean, Mexico had to make some concessions in terms of our actions, in terms of handling the migration issue much better than in the past, and also attacking things on fentanyl. But, I mean, Donald Trump had to make a large concession as well this morning, in the sense that in the end, he had to back off and not impose the duties that he has promised to do many, many weeks ago.
But, Luis, I suppose the point being that in the next 4 weeks, there's going to be a lot of talk, and that's part of it, a negotiation to try and, I guess, get past the 30-day mark and have something else in place. And that will be to do with the balance of trade, won't it?
Yeah, absolutely. But I mean, these duties, 25% on Canada and Mexico, are not credible. I mean, Canada and Mexico are the largest suppliers to the U.S. There's a lot of regions in the U.S. that depend on Mexico and Canada, particularly the Midwest, Texas, California. This is, they're important states. There are many industries that depend on what Mexico supplies and also Canada. So if the U.S. want to impose duties, it cannot impose them only on its main trading partners. So, I mean, I think that these duties are used as an extortion for Donald Trump to get concessions on migration and fentanyl. But I don't think trade-wise these duties will, in the end, stay.
You don't think there'll be any tariffs in the end against all this finishes?
No, I mean, I think there will be some tariffs, absolutely. But I don't think that the U.S. will impose duties on Mexico and Canada more than it would impose on other countries. On the contrary, I think in the end, Mexico and Canada will be a spur in relative terms with respect to other countries as to the duties the U.S. might end up imposing.
Well, we'll see how it comes through. Luis, thank you so much for speaking to me. Luis de la Calle, the managing director of Della Calle, Madrazo and Manquera, and also former undersecretary at the Ministry of the Economy in Mexico. And let me just remind you of what has changed within the last hour, which is Canada has also got a 30-day reprieve on the large tariffs that had been threatened by Donald Trump on imports from Canada into the US, Mexico having got the same kind of deal just a little bit early, but it only extends to 30 days. And after that, well, we'll see what happens. And of course, we'll bring all you the details about that here on World Business Report. But that's it from us for now. Bye-bye.
An Bord erwarten Sie Bars, Spa-Duschen sowie preisgekrönte Bordunterhaltung. Es ist also kein Wunder, dass Emirates als beste Fluggesellschaft der Welt ausgezeichnet wurde. Wir fliegen Sie zu über 140 Reisezielen. Und mit unseren Interline-Partnern weltweit bieten wir Ihnen Anschlussflüge zu weiteren 1700 Städten auf 6 Kontinenten. Wenn wir behaupten, dass wir eine der größten internationalen Fluggesellschaften sind, meinen wir, wir bringen Sie an Ihr Wunschziel. Jetzt buchen auf emirates.de. Fly Emirates. Fly better.